From KUOW at Soundside, I'm Libby Denkman. Summer is a great time to curl up in the park with a good book. It's also a time when we start to thaw a bit from our Seattle freeze and head out to explore everything Washington has to offer. And from the Palouse to the Peninsula, we have a lot of landscape to cover. Those landscapes and their histories have inspired many of our local authors. Washington State Poet Laureate Rena Priest is one of those authors and an avid reader. Recently, she told NPR about two books by local authors that capture the spirit of Washington State. Rena told our community engagement producer, Alex Rochester, how she chose those two books, Timothy Egan's The Good Rain and Vine Deloria Jr.'s Indians of the Pacific Northwest.
Well, I think that for the Timothy Egan book, he follows the journey of the first book ever written about the state called The Canoe in the Saddle, and looks at how the state has changed since that book was written. And the thing that strikes me about The Good Rain is just how beautifully he renders the natural abundance and splendor of the region. You know, he gives it to you whole and says, these things have been taken away, but these things are still here throughout the book. That, you know, he talks about like the damming of the rivers and the logging of the forests and the construction of Hanford and all of these other things that have been done in Washington State. But there's like a sense of hope and optimism that runs throughout the book, despite all of these things, all of these alterations, that, you know, the land is still giving and resilient and beautiful. So that was one thing that I appreciated a lot, that and that the history was so honest and unflinching. You know, he didn't kind of gloss over anything. And in some places, the book is actually quite brutal, but it's still somehow hopeful. So I appreciated that a lot. And then in Indians of the Pacific Northwest, I really appreciated Vine Deloria giving an indigenous perspective. He spent a lot of time with tribes. He, you know, as you know, he was an indigenous scholar and writer and thinker. And he really took his time to write that book and offer that perspective. And so I really appreciated that as well.
Yeah, the way that you're talking about the books, like, it's what resonated with me as well. Like, it's an unflinching look at the history, but it's also told with a lot of love. And like, love is being able to be honest is how I view love, at least.
Definitely, I agree. And, you know, the thing about learning from our past mistakes, that old cliche, those who don't learn history are doomed to repeat it. And so it is kind of a loving act to give somebody an honest history.
Yeah, I mean, you've kind of touched on this before, but regardless of where you're from, like, what do you think reading about your local region brings to the reader?
I think it will definitely bring a much deeper appreciation. One thing that comes to mind is like the geology and like the natural history, not just the history of people, but the natural history that's offered in both books. So I'm thinking about towards the end of The Good Rain, Timothy Egan talks about the falls that once existed in eastern Washington that released water from a lake that was under, I guess, the Great Missoula Lake. There was a geological incident, something happened, natural dam or something burst, and all of that water drained. And so now it's just this large cliff. It was the largest waterfall in the world at one time, and then now it's just a cliff. But also Vine Deloria Jr. talks about it at the start of his book, about how indigenous oral storytelling, there's something in it that can speak to like the very, very old history of this place. And it talks about that lake and those waterfalls. And there's this coyote story about how how it was drained. And I think that those kinds of stories about, you know, the deep history, the geologic history, the history before humans, and, you know, that I think enriches a person's experience of Washington State in particular, because we do have such gorgeous landscapes. Having that deeper understanding of a place really makes it that much richer, I think.
You have written about Washington yourself. Like, what challenges or have you had with putting this incredible state into words?
In some ways, the poems, when I'm writing, you know, about the natural beauty of this place, it's almost too easy. the words just kind of come and flow, and it's in those instances where it feels like the poems are writing themselves. It is a little bit harder for me to write about the history, you know, tribal history of Washington. For obvious reasons, it's challenging because a lot of it's very painful. But when writing about the landscape, no problem.
And I know that as when you were training as a writer, you were on the East Coast and you were drawn back out here. Could you talk a little bit about leaving Washington State and the draw to come back?
Yeah. So I was really excited to be accepted at Sarah Lawrence and have the opportunity to go study in New York. That was a huge moment for me. And I really enjoyed my time out there, but I did feel like there, you know, there's kind of a, it's strange to explain, like a sickness in my soul from not having a connection to natural landscapes. You know, I could go to Central Park and that was as much as I could have of the trees. And I lived along the Hudson and, you know, the Palisades there in Yonkers are across the river in New Jersey are really beautiful. So, you know, there was some connection to the land, but it just was really, it was really hard for me to be so separate from my homelands, I think. I remember one time during the summer, you know, it's a really hot summer over there compared to here in Washington. And I just wanted to go immerse myself in fresh water, like a lake somewhere. And so we drove for 3 hours to get to a lake. And there was just a little tiny section of a lake corked off where people could swim. And it was like, you know, half of New York had the same idea and they were all there. And so it just kind of felt like, oh, wow, okay, it's time to go home.
Yeah, that 45 minutes that it takes to get out to a lake here, or even less, like that doesn't seem so bad now. Thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
That was KUOW's Alex Rochester talking with Rena Priest, Washington State Poet Laureate. Rena is working on a new anthology of salmon poems celebrating the keystone species that has come to define so much of Washington's history. Washington-based poets can send in submissions for this anthology through Humanities Washington at their website, humanities.org. We also asked you about your favorite books written about Washington and by Washington authors. Then we reached out to those authors to hear more about the thing that makes our state a strong literary backdrop. Our most recommended author was one Rena Priest also nominated, Timothy Egan's The Good Rain.
Your hope as an author is that the words outlive you and certainly outlive the time of publication. And to my great gratification and surprise, this book continues to find an audience. The histories I was raised on in school were just BS. I mean, they were great bearded railroad men pushing their way west and, you know, conquering all the Indians and then taking over their territory and then leveling the hills, damming the rivers and cutting the trees and building cities and then having statues erected in their honor. And I thought this is just such a terrible representation of this magical region. So when I set out, I wanted to look at it with fresh eyes and look at it, this is the important thing, from the point of view of nature.
Was there a difference, and has there been over the 32 years, in the reactions of Washington locals compared to non-locals when you're retelling this history and giving us new context for it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Washington locals mostly wrote me and continue to write me notes and say, they still marvel that you can go to the North Cascades and see peaks that were only climbed for the first time in my generation. The other thing is the sense of loss. When I wrote this book, we were probably 2 million less people lived in Washington State. That's a huge amount of people. Consider that all of Montana only has 1 million people. So we've added 2 million people. The metro area alone is almost 4 million people. So Washingtonians have this sort of dual reaction. One is, oh, I've been to that place you described. It's so cool and amazing. Thank you for bringing it to life again. The other one is, again, that sense of loss that we're sort of being overwhelmed by people, and that will newcomers be able to experience the same thing we Washingtonians have been able to experience? you can write about nature. You can write about, you know, waterfalls that still renew you and surprise. You can write about the amazing fact that we live in a metro area of, I said, 4 million people, but there's the Alpine Lakes wilderness an hour away. You can write about these physical things that still enlighten you, still make you feel good, still make you feel fully human. But I want people to come away with a little bit of the soul of the place. If I've captured some of that, it's not just that we're still close to nature. It's not just that, you know, there's fear to fail. You know, you can start fresh and people don't judge you by your school or your past or your family or your wealth. There's also an inherent sort of goofiness, which I like about the Northwest, that people don't take themselves that seriously. So if people read this book, I would love them to come with those three things, a little bit of that sense of soul and sense of character. If I capture some of that, and if it's universal, and if it's still there 30 some years after I wrote the book, you know, that makes you feel good. That makes you feel that that I did touch a couple of veins that are eternal.
Hi, my name is John, and I live in Renton, Washington. The book that I choose is The Boys in the Boat, written by Daniel James Brown back in 2013. It is an excellent story, written very well, and really shows how hard those young men worked, what character they had, and really provides a good representation of the strength of character of Washingtonians.
I spend an enormous amount of time at Suzuko Library at the University of Washington, just reading newspapers on microfiche from the 1930s. I heard somebody recently say that Seattle is a city that doesn't really know its history. And I think that was true to some extent, at least when I wrote The Boys in the Boat.
You make it clear that the topography and way of life in Washington was integral to these men and their success against the most elite rowers in the U.S. and then across the world. Do you consider them underdogs or underestimated?
I think underestimated. They were, in fact, a very, very good crew. And they faced a very good German crew, a very good Italian crew, very good British crew once they got to Berlin. But the fact is, they probably were the favorites to go to Berlin, at least from early in that season. They had showed extraordinary ability, particularly at the Poughkeepsie race. So they were largely greatly underestimated by the Eastern press in particular. I think Europeans may actually have had a better, more realistic assessment of them, but the Eastern press very much was surprised by their abilities. That whole fundraising effort after the Poughkeepsie Regatta, where people were selling little paper badges for 25 cents a piece on street corners in Seattle, it was just a remarkable amount of community involvement. And they raised that $5,000 largely through very, very small contributions like that. So, you know, I think one of the universal aspects of the story is this notion that people pull together when they come together as a community, a great deal more is possible than they might have thought is possible. That gold medal that these guys won really did put Seattle on the map. I mean, in a very literal way, much of the country had only the vaguest idea of where Seattle was and pictured it as a much more backward sort of place than it was in the mid-1930s.
This is Blair from Bainbridge Island. The Washington book I'd recommend is Lawn Boy by Jonathan Evason, one of the most banned books in America last year for reasons unfounded and reaching. While a lot of Evason's novels take place in Washington, this one struck me as relevant in its portrayal of the growing wealth disparity in our region, where affluence and poverty live in such close proximity and yet inhabit completely different worlds in terms of opportunity.
And if you hear me start running, that's because there's a bald eagle going after one of my hens. I'm kind of surprised of all my books. This Lawn Boy was the one that somebody recommended. I would have thought it would have been West of Here or Legends of the North Cascade, something more quintessentially Northwestern. But I did have a very specific reason for Lawn Boy because it's a class narrative. And I used to be a landscaper, and a lot of the crew came over from the other side of the Agate Pass Bridge because, you know, Bainbridge is a pretty wealthy and affluent community, Bainbridge Island. And that's where a lot of the gardens were worked on, but a lot of the laborers came from across the bridge to North Kitsap proper. We call it the service entrance. It's a portrait of a different life on the Port Madison Indian Reservation in comparison to, you know, somewhat wealthy Bainbridge Island.
In Legends of the North Cascades, you paint the mountains as something more enticing to the protagonist than actually like hanging out in society. Do you think that is something that's quintessential to Washington, or is that something that's growing as an American sentiment with how fast modern life moves in general?
A lot of the people that came here, you know, east to Washington, they were coming to an outpost. And I do think that there's sort of a lingering there's a lingering sense of rugged individualism that I think still exists here in Washington, particularly because I live near Port Angeles. And Port Angeles feels about as much like Alaska as anywhere you could be in the lower 48. I mean, there's a really strong libertarian streak that runs through it. People are very self-sufficient and outdoorsy. Like, everybody knows how to use a chainsaw. You know, most people can fix their cars, driving their garbage to the dump instead of having it picked up at their curb and things like that. So to me, those things are very Washington. You know, what struck me about the Olympic Peninsula when I was riding west of here was I thought of Faulkner's old quote, and I'm paraphrasing, something about, you know, how the past is not the past. And he was talking about the institution of slavery largely. But it kind of applies to the Olympic Peninsula in Washington because of our failed institutions like commercial logging, for instance, things like that. In order to get to one of the most quietest places on Earth at one point was in the middle of the Olympic mountains, where there was no air traffic or anything like that. But in order to get there, you had to drive around a peninsula that was just gutted with hundreds of thousands of acres of clear cut. And it took them 80 years with working 30, 40 crews at a time to destroy it all. But so I was always sort of struck by that, the ambiguity of it. You're going to, you know, your goal is to get to some of the most pristine wilderness in the North American continent. And to do it, you were very aware of, you know, how it had changed, how human interaction, particularly European white interaction, had changed the landscape.
What book would you recommend that you believe represents and describes Washington well?
Well, I love the way Jess Walter writes love letters to Spokane. That's one place I would start.
Hi, Jess.
Hello.
I watched your talk at the University of Houston, Victoria, in partnership with American Book Review, and you talked a lot about how you think about place, and you said you had to write about Spokane. Why did you have to write about Spokane?
You know, I think for me specifically, the place I'm from was part of the story I was telling, part of my origin story. And I had grown up believing that I had to leave Spokane to become successful as an author. You know, there's a great poet from Spokane named Carolyn Kaiser, who was, I believe, the second woman to win a Pulitzer Prize in poetry. And there was a line in her poems, something like, "After Spokane, what hell could exist?" And I think every writer sort of has to leave their home and look back on it in a certain way. But for me, staying for family, it became part of, you know, defining who I was. I could write about Spokane's 150 years and evoke a time when the city didn't exist, when it was nothing but forest, and when you could barely, when you could stand in the river and just have salmon all around you. These are things that not so many generations ago remember. And so I think there's a kind of close connection to the history and the natural world here that I think set it apart from other fictional worlds. And I think that also makes for more iconoclastic characters who maybe don't fit into the mold. There are writers who are from the Pacific Northwest that we don't think of as Northwest writers, someone like Raymond Carver or Dennis Johnson, who set so many stories here. But I think their stories and their novels, or their short stories especially, are full of characters that we all recognize because they have that taciturn quality, that sort of dry sense of humor that rises out of this place. And it's one of my favorite aspects of Northwest writing.
in the Cold Millions, like there are some really beautiful passages. And thinking of one where one of the characters is reflecting that there couldn't possibly be a better view than they had in Spokane. But at the same time, you don't shy away from bleak scenes of the town. I mean, granted, it's in a different era, but you're not shy about that. Like, how has the honesty with which you've written about Spokane been received by the locals?
I think very well. That a novelist and the Chamber of Commerce are looking for very different things in a place. As a novelist, you're looking for conflict and for pathos and drama, and finding it in the way miners were treated in the early 1900s, the terrible working conditions, the huge gap between the wealthy mining magnates and the poor workers who had nothing but their bodies to carry from job to job. That is the stuff of fiction. And it's a different kind of romanticism. It's the romanticism of striving and of wanting more. And, you know, for me growing up, I remember believing that I had almost been to Central Park because of my reading of Catcher in the Rye. And I have always wanted to create a sort of fictional map of the place that I'm from. And so nothing gives me more pleasure than to have readers come to town and want to retrace the steps of the Cold Millions or find themselves at the donut shop from Citizen Vince. Creating that fictional version is a kind of romanticism.
That was Alex Rochester from our community engagement team talking with a handful of your recommended Washington authors.